Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
And we are in love. We experience one of the greatest gifts of life. We're able to see ourselves through someone else's eyes. Did you know that love above all else is a gift to yourself? Like the Beatles said, all there is love. My quote is, love is a roller coaster of life. Hello, and thanks for joining me as Valentine's Day is coming upon us. What a better topic to discuss other than love. It can be the most simple and the most complex simultaneously. So the topic of today's show is the nature of love. And actually, I'm going to be taking information from my book, Love, What's Personality Got to Do With It? I always feel like Chuck Berry when I do that. Love, What's Personality Got to Do With It? And I'm going to be talking about love and sharing some of the things as far as personality color and how each personality color really defines love differently. And then also talking more about the nature of love. The book itself, Love, What's Personality Got to Do With It, is available through HayHouse.com or Amazon.com. One of the things that I found from the feedback I get is it's a fun book. It's an insightful book. But most importantly, it helps you and the people in your life that you are in love with, that love isn't a one-size-fits-all, that our personality really has a lot to do with the nature of love and our expectations around it, as well as our conditioning. You know, our best teachers about relationship and love are our parents. Now, I said best teachers. I didn't necessarily say that what we learn from them about love is what we need, or that the way they express love is something certainly that we desire. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it's really important to talk, to be able to talk about love and to be able to share the needs that we have around love. So I think today you'll find the show very, very interesting, and maybe just pick up a simple little tidbit that you're going to be able to recognize that you can bring forward not only in your own definition of love, but you could share with someone who is in your life that returns that love, and do it in a way where it's a very positive, respectful, a door opening instead of sounding like an ultimatum. In addition to talking about love, I'm going to be taking your calls and sharing my medical intuitive skills. So if you have a question for me about your health, or you want to talk about love or relationships, I encourage you to call me at 877-230-3062, or you can call me at 425-644-5620. Those numbers are good in the U.S. and Canada and for international callers. You know, I started out with my love book trying to figure out what love really was. And so I'm going to start out the show today with asking you a question. Have you really thought about love and wondered how this one single emotion can have such a profound impact, not only on how we feel about ourselves, how we feel about others, but how we feel about life in general? If we tend to have a pessimistic perspective of love, it's really interesting how we carry that pessimism over in our relationships, and then also in the way that we interact with people. I really didn't think about love. That's part of my personality, is that for me, if I think about it, love as a yellow is extremely complex, really emotionally complex. And for me, for love to be emotionally complex isn't something that's comfortable to me. So I really had to go in when I was preparing for this book, is I had to go in and look at love and the nature of love instead of looking at all the expectations we have around it and all the disappointments and all the joys we have around it. What really is the nature of love? And the more that I spent looking at love and really getting out of my head and getting into my heart, everything started to change. I learned that love is an emotion that we experience throughout our entire body, and it's the true connection that ties us to our soul. So much in our humanness, love is something that we always, the song is, we look for it in the wrong places. We always look outside for love, and we always feel that if we find love outside, then somehow we're going to become in love with ourselves. We do to some degree, but if the person is different than us, then how they define love and how we define love can truly become an obstacle course for us to try to keep the relationship in a healthy manner. So when you first start looking at the nature of love, you really have to go inside. You have to go to that, what I call the enlightenment of love. You have to go inside and really look at what it means to you. How does it connect you with your inner self? Is it full of problems and emotional hurts and wounds? Or is it, can you find those little pieces in your life that has all those rewards attached to it, where you can see yourself through someone's eyes and where you can feel good about yourself and where someone shares with you your strengths and the potential that's inside of you, so you're able to walk into that potential and turn it into a reality? Or is your life around love and your perception always fraught with problems? It's never right. The grass is greener on the other side. Whatever that metaphor may be, that's why we go in and we yearn and long for love and we look for it outside of ourselves. But really, true love has got to start from the inside. And that's what I really learned as I went deeper into love, is that the nature of love has to begin with us. And if we understand love and our needs, then it's easier for us to communicate those needs to others, where we get what we need and they get what they need. And that really is the reward and the gift of love. It changed my entire perception because I realized that love is all-encompassing and it really touches every part of our being, mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, meaning energetically and soulfully at that deepest part. To heal what ails us, it's present literally energetically transforms those negative emotions and gets rid of those limiting beliefs that are responsible for illness in the first place. For example, if you have a belief, a pessimistic belief around love within you, is that you're not worthy of love, that overrides in everything and it drains you of energy and it keeps you in a chemical state of fight or flight in the body. Ultimately, that wears the body down. It wears you down energetically. You ruminate over the things that have never been right and love has never been right. And why can't I find the love that I truly desire? And it's a spiral and it spirals down, and the body is the ultimate receptor for that type of spiraling down. It just plain gets tired. And then that can be the root of aches and pains and ultimately illness. To open our lives to love, we have to be able to savor the beauty of it. And the beauty of it sometimes isn't so blatant that we can see it. Sometimes it's the subtlety of love. It's the kind words that we say to ourselves when we look at self-love. And it's when we get those subtle things where maybe someone, excuse me, in our life comes in and they don't have to say they love us, but they reach over and just seem to know to touch our hand or to give us a hug or to just, you know, cuddle us in their arms when we need it the most. When we're in that place, we feel such tremendous love. The emotion is so healing. It releases the endorphins and the neurotransmitters become stimulated and the body just feels like all is well. No matter what has happened, that you just kind of sent that radar message out, I need a hug or I need a touch or just a kind word. Whenever we reach that, excuse me, I obviously need to go in the verbalizing of love. La, here we're back. So what we do is we go in and we actually get to see ourselves. Love, most importantly, lightens us up. And what do I mean by that? We stop taking ourselves so seriously. It's an interesting thing of human nature and where we are, is that we truly, truly have become such a serious perception of what is right, instead of letting our playfulness, that inner soul child, come forward. And in love, love is playful. Love isn't about doom and gloom. It isn't about hurt. It's all about the playfulness of what we're looking to bring into our life. Love, when it's directed inward, connects us to the inner child. I'm not talking about that inner child that becomes wounded or has all these past hurts about it. I'm talking about that soul child that sees every experience in love as being absolutely perfect. It's that child part of us that loves to laugh, it loves to play, and it sees every day as the first day of our life. When we see love through the eyes of our hurts, it really we pay a tremendous price. We really don't get to touch the true essence of what love is all about. And as a result, we don't get to experience the true love that can come from the relationships in our lives. We always have these expectations, or our fears and insecurities come into the relationship. And love doesn't mean having to make yourself vulnerable to someone to use that vulnerability against you, but it's the desire to be able to share with someone what you really care about. Love requires acceptance. First of all, the ability to accept ourselves and then accept others. We are conditioned to accept the foibles of others and their idiosyncrasies much faster, with much more compassion and patience than we are with ourselves. Acceptance means that we have to take the good with the bad, the highs with the lows. Acceptance creates the safe place where two people can meet heart to heart, mind to mind, and body to body, and do so without feeling vulnerable or the fear of having their vulnerabilities used against them, especially in a conflict situation. Love is unconditional. What that means is it means not keeping score with who did what. Loving unconditionally loops back to acceptance. When there's acceptance, it fosters that sacred union where passion, caring, generosity, and kindness, all those things that drive love and drive how love expresses itself in our relationships. Unconditional, it means don't keep score, tit for tat. You hurt my feelings 3 times, I hurt yours 4 times. That's not what love is about. Love is about love is about forgiveness, both of yourself and your mate. First of all, you must forgive yourself. You know, really, circumstances do change, and you have to be open to those circumstances changing. And instead of looking back on a relationship that is constantly a dynamic process where it's constantly in change, you always have to go back. And when something happens that doesn't feel loving to you, it just means that circumstances changed. Maybe you changed. Maybe you were having a bad day. Maybe your mind has been more on work than it is on the relationship. You know, it really does take two to tango in order to make love work. So you have to be able to really go in and look at the forgiveness in yourself and not hold yourself in a place where it feels like you are always wrong. Love means never having to say you're sorry, but it does mean having to admit when you're wrong. And if you're wrong, then there's nothing wrong with saying to someone, my apologies, I'm wrong. And what that may do is it opens it up. And if it's something that's not your nature, as yellows, we don't say we're sorry, but we will say my apologies, which is the same thing from our perspective. And we don't give that out freely. But what we do is we give it out when we've recognized that somehow we've caused hurt, somehow that we've caused something that has caused the other person to not feel good about themselves. And one of the things, if a yellow says, my apologies, I was wrong, please don't come back to them and say, well, I can't believe it. You're finally admitting that you're wrong. Don't make a big deal out of it. And the reason for that is because for the yellow, it isn't that we're really coming in and talking about the different things that are hurtful to us. But what we're coming in is we're saying, my apologies. I want to do what's right. The Navajo Indians say the inability to forgive is like taking poison and waiting for your spirit to die. Because we're all connected energetically, what we do affects all else that exists, the person and all the energy in the field. Forgiveness is merely removing the emotional charge around a conversation or an experience or a situation. It not only heals, it frees the heart to experience the true depths of love. Now, sometimes we get confused about what that love and that forgiveness really looks like. If someone has overstepped your boundaries and they have really caused you deep harm, I encourage you to talk about that. But that doesn't mean that you have to turn the other cheek or that you have to continue to put yourself in that same situation. You can say to someone, that hurt deeply, and I don't want that to happen again. That is not my perception of love. And then the ball is in the other person's court to figure out how they're going to change their behavior or what was said in order to be able to keep the relationship alive. Love is not about, forgiveness is not about forgetting. It's about removing the emotional charge. And the way we have to remove that emotional charge is not sweeping it under the rug, but what we have to do is we have to be willing to set the boundaries. Love is non-judgmental. In reality, as human beings, it's impossible for us to not be judgmental because we use emotions to be able to discern. We use the word judgment to discern. Is what is happening, is what I'm feeling in alignment with who I am or out of alignment? When we use judgment as a discernment tool, it's a very, very healthy part. But in the context of non-judgment that I'm talking about around relationships, not being judgmental means not being critical and using your criticism and your opinions to cause harm, meaning getting even with someone or trying to get them to do what you want them to do, even if it causes them to override their own needs. It's not non-judgment in the case of the relationship is, it's not, love is not a manipulative tool. It isn't about guilting someone. So when I talk about non-judgment, it's about not finding fault with them, not using those faults against them in order to be able to manipulate them to get what you want. The minute love becomes a power struggle, love starts to wither and die. So thoughts, food for thought for you to go in and look at all of the different aspects of love. I'm going to be taking your calls. I'm seeing that I'm getting some calls that are coming in now at this point in time. So I encourage you to call me if you have a question about love. The phone number for calling me is 877-230-3062 or 425-644-5620. One of the things that I do when I come in and start to look at love and the definition of love, what I want to do is I want to come in and actually start to look at it from the world of personality. If you don't know your personality color, then what I encourage you to do is to go to my website, www.Richtberger, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R, also pronounced Reitberger, .com. Richtberger.com. There's a mini personality assessment on there. It'll give you a chance to come in and really look at yourself and understand your neurology and understand why you're different, maybe different than your mate, maybe different than the people in your life, your friends, your family. You know, it isn't a one size fits all. We don't choose the family that we do, but we don't necessarily choose the compatible personalities. You've said it before on my show. I'm a yellow personality. I have a red father, a red sister, and a green mother and a green brother. And it's kind of like go figure. So again, it's just a different way to be able to look at it, things. Okay, let me jump in and take a call. Hi, Barb. How are you?
How are you doing?
I'm doing very good. How can I help you?
Okay, Carol, I have this crazy acute sense of smell. It's almost a little overwhelming. I can smell people's perfume, but I can smell also on people not only what they've ate, but if they have some sort, it's like I look at a person and I can smell their breath and I'd be like, oh, diabetes.
Yes.
And, or you know, the crazy Atkins, that's another thing. But I have a very hyper sense of smell. And I'm almost wondering, is there something wrong with me?
No, there isn't. In the intuition process, we use our five physical senses to some degree when we connect intuitively with someone. But the sense of smell in most people, Barb, really isn't as developed or as refined. It's almost like somewhere in our conditioning, we take that particular sense of who we are, that sense, for granted. In your particular case, that ability to use that sense of smell to connect with someone at that physical or emotional or mental or even energetic level is a very heightened state of your intuition. And what you're doing is you're using that sense of smell to use your body as a barometer to get a sense of where that person is. It's part of your empathic skills to be able to see where that person is. Diabetes does have a specific smell. Candida does. Also cancer does. Someone that has a highly developed sense of smell can actually smell cancer in people. And what you're doing is that part of you is so refined. Now, neurologically and anatomically, it means that in your cranial nerves, there's 12 cranial nerves, your sense of smell nerve is so heightened that it's usually a tool to be able to come in and relate at that spiritual level, but it's also a tool for you to be able to discern very quickly when you walk into a building whether you can stay there or not. It can be very disconcerting. One of the things that does tend to come, Barb, with a heightened sense of smell is a heightened sense of taste. They're kind of like bosom buddies. So a lot of times if you could smell diabetes, you might, or candida, you might even get that musty taste in your mouth, or with candida, it's got a little bit of a metallic taste to it. When you go into cancer, there's actually a taste of sourness, almost like a sour, bitter, you know, lemon drop or something like that. So what that says is that it's just part of the intuition. Now, it can be very distracting. My sense is that, you know, no matter what we do, that's who you are, truthfully. But what you can do is you can use that sense of smell as a tool of discernment as to where you want to be or not. If you are concerned about it from a physical anatomical standpoint, one of the things that I encourage you to do, have you been to an ear, throat, nose doctor?
They all just kind of look at me and I'm like, docs, this is hindering my dating ability.
Yeah.
I'm like, they don't smell right. And when they do smell right, they're totally wrong.
Oh, we have another layer of intuition.
Exactly.
But the reason I had asked that is it sounds really weird, but when I go in anatomically into your nasal passage and go into the sinus, you actually have, it looks like a crevice. It's not really a polyp, but you tend to have this, I would say in the sinus cavity, you have this one spot that seems to, maybe sinus infections, maybe you get more drainage out of that right nasal passage when you have any kind of drainage. Now, what you're experiencing from smell isn't because there's something wrong, but my sense is that when I go into that right sinus cavity, it's got areas in it that just naturally pick up smells. Mm-hmm. Almost like a bacteria, almost that something that gets in there and it just heightens itself. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it makes total sense because as you bring that fact up, quite a few years ago for my TMJ, I had a full head CAT scan, and that was one of the, they said it's not a big issue, but there is something that's, you know, there's like a little thing that's near your sinuses that they could see, but it wasn't sister, anything like that. They just said there, you know, there's a little bit of irritation we can see because it was actually an MRI. So they could actually see everything.
Exactly. And again, that isn't just, you could just kind of see that if you wanted to do it. There is nothing that is there, but you could see it with your nose within your nose. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense.
When you come in, and that's that heightened part of who you are. One of the things also with the TMJ, when you go through the process of writing the TMJ, a lot of times what it will do is it will cause those cranial nerves to shift just a little. Mm-hmm. And it may very well be that if you chew or you lay a certain way, or that jaw maybe kind of locks down in that hinge just a little bit. And again, nothing like TMJ. What it can do is it can throw those cranial nerves off, and that could also stimulate and heighten it. So if it gets to a place where it really becomes uncomfortable, where you literally want to hold your nose all the time or your breath, then what you might want to do is find someone with craniosacral therapy training. And what they'll do is they'll work on those nerves, and they will get those nerves to where your brain brain really seats right in your head where you don't have any kind of tilting. That's something else that you can look at. Mm-hmm. If you get to a place, Barb, where you have any kind of sinus congestion or any kind of drainage, you might want to use that nasal cleansing with a pot. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And that can work really well for you as well. Again, it's kind of your nose within the nose. It gets more plugged up before you get plugged up. That's another way to look at it.
Perfect. Thank you very, very much.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you very much. It's fun to do that. Well, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to jump in. I'm going to take Carol from New York. And then Rebecca and Sam, I think I'm going to take a commercial break. I'd like to get Carol on the line. Hi, Carol. How can I help you, hon?
Hi, I'm Carol from New York. I was wanting to get a reading on my health, if you could.
Absolutely, sweetie. Where would you like me to start? And the reason I ask that is you and I have a very short period of time. I'd like to be as focused as you're focused and be able to use my sight that way.
My abdomen, please.
Okay. It's twofold, honey. It's a little bit difficult. I think that's part of your complexities of trying to figure out what's going on because you have both the upper and the lower digestive system that are at odds with each other. When I go into the upper digestive system, the things that you put into your mouth, for some reason, your digestive system isn't breaking it down the way it needs to.
Wow.
When it comes into the stomach part, when food comes in, I encourage you to chew, chew, chew. You feel like you're trying that, but chew, because what it'll do is it'll stimulate the saliva in order to take the food once it's really broken down, go down into the esophagus without creating any kind of minor spasming, gets into the stomach, and it's broken down in a more ready fashion. So you don't have to keep that acidity level in the body to be able to create that abdominal or that stomach chime, it's called. So that's one thing. When you get any kind of food that isn't broken down, is too much of a solid particle attached to it, then what it does is when it drops down into the small intestine, I can go into the small intestine, and there's a couple of things. Your pH is out of balance. First of all, work at alkalizing. The second thing is that in those solid particles of food, it gets into the small intestine, and it feels like it gets stuck in nooks and crannies. And your small intestine, the muscle of it, isn't squeezing and moving things as quickly as they need to. That may very well be because of the food itself. The particle feels almost to your small intestine like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do with this? How am I going to move this along? The other thing is, do you drink aloe juice at all, hun?
Mm-mm.
It has no taste to it, really. If you were open to that, you might want to go to a health food store and get some aloe juice. Refrigerating it makes it a lot easier. You don't need to do it every time you drink water, but the aloe part feels like it's going to cool your intestines. And it's going to be able to create an alkaline environment. So some of that mucus that's needed to help in moving that food along, there's kind of like a mucus lining in the intestine. It will be able to help you. So I'm going to ask a question. Have you been to see a doctor?
Sort of.
Okay. Have they diagnosed you at all, honey?
Not really. I had a nuclear scan, and they didn't find anything.
Right, right.
But constipation is a major problem.
It is, and that's part of that particle becoming stuck and then not having the mucus part of it. Mineral oil would work. It doesn't taste very good, but it would work. But one of the things, and I'm not allowed to diagnose, but I do, and I don't, honestly, I'm not sure that you actually have it, but I would like to go in, and I would like you to go to WebMD and do some research on diverticulitis.
Really? That's what I think, too. Because I have a lot of pain on the left side. A lot of pain.
Yes.
Every time I eat, I'm miserable. Every time. I don't care if I eat a salad or a cracker, I'm miserable.
Yeah. And what it feels like is, with all the things that I talked about, is that it feels like the intestine trying so hard to move the things along kind of twists and turns and presses and so forth. And again, I'm not I'm not allowed to diagnose, and I'm not really sure really when I go in, sweetie, there's a lot of different aspects of diverticulosis, but, and you have some more of the symptoms of it, but you don't have some of the symptoms of it. That's why I'm probably about as confused, truthfully, even if it wasn't, you know, wanting to not diagnose. But a lot of the symptomology, if you look at that, it's almost like your guts, excuse me for saying that way, twist and turn on themselves, just trying to move this stuff along.
Exactly what it feels like.
And if you can go in and look at those symptomologies and then look at things that are offered for that, then my sense is that, and especially the alkaline, you could rebuild that flora in that gut, and then you could, that mucus could build back up so everything doesn't feel as dry. The aloe water is very cooling. It cools our intestinal tract. It cleans it out. It creates that alkaline environment for that bacteria, fungus, yeast, in order to get into some kind of balance. So that's something, sweetie, I would encourage you to do some research on. Ask about, if you find that you want to talk to your doctor, go back to your doctor after you've had the reading, you know, you've gathered the information, and ask your doctor the questions. That's the gift of doctors. They've done a lot of study. They have a lot of different ways to be able to look at it. Please do know that if it is even in symptomology like it, they're not going to find it if it isn't twisted and turned. An MRI, unless you've got it, really got it to the point where those intestines start to turn on themselves and twist or knot and everything, it's not going to show up, honey. So it's just kind of that spasming, that little bit of spasming that comes in. And it really, frankly, won't make a difference of what you eat, because it's how it's broken down before it gets to the stomach, how the stomach breaks it down, and how it enters into the intestinal tract.
Thank you so much. You've been so much help.
You are most welcome, most welcome. So I wish you well with that, and then gather what you need. There's a lot of different ways to be able to make some lifestyle changes, some very simple things to be able to deal with it before it becomes an issue with you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. You've got snow today. I found out when I was watching the weather.
Lots of snow. I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, we won't talk about that. All right, well, light and love to you. Okay, so Rebecca, my pleasure. So why don't we go ahead into a commercial break? Stay tuned, because when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the nature of love and how do we turn that into the nature that we need to be able to get the love we need. So stay tuned. I'll be right back.
Would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
If you have a question for Carol, call her now, toll free at 1-877-230-3062.
Hello, and and welcome back. I'm your host, Carol Reitberger, and today I've been talking about the nature of love and what it requires if we're to keep our love relationships growing and thriving. I'm also sharing my medical intuitive skills for you. So if you have a question for me about your health, you can call me at 877-230-3260, or you can call me at 425-644-5620. We can talk about health. We can talk about love. We can talk about relationships. The only thing I'm really not very good at as a medical intuitive is what you are going to be when you grow up. Haven't figured that one out myself. I'd like to invite you to join me for my Your Health teleclass on February 18th at 5 o'clock p.m. That's Pacific time. My Your Health teleclasses is a series. I have them every month. The teleclasses are free. This particular month of February, I'm going to be discussing arthritis. And it's a 60-minute teleclass. And what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be talking about the different forms of arthritis. I've been getting a lot of submissions and suggestions from different people that are going to be on the teleclass itself. If you have a particular part of arthritis that you're interested in and me covering, go to my website, www.ritberger.com. Submit your question to me, and I will literally try to put that in the write-up to answer the question. 60-minute call. I'm going to be talking about the psychological predispositions behind arthritis. How does it look energetically? Map it in the chakras. And then also talking about the role that your personality plays in the development or susceptibility of arthritis. So again, I look at arthritis from the clinical, the psychological, the energetic, map it in the chakras, and then also in personality. And then what I do is I go in and I look at all the different treatments, or most of the treatments, that are both conventional and then also alternative treatments. So what it does is it gives you information and a lot of options on how to be able to deal with it. There are over 40 million Americans that are actually impacted by arthritis. And arthritis itself actually has a connection to over 100 degenerative diseases that are really associated with it. Following the teleclass, I'm going to be answering questions, kind of like what I'm doing on my show right now. So if you would like to have a question for me there and you haven't been able to get in on the show, free teleclass, February 18th, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. How do you register? Just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. So in the last segment, I talked about how the nature of love requires accepting, not keeping score, practicing forgiveness, and not being judgmental or critical. But it also requires us to be respectful. And what that is, it's respectfulness toward ourselves. But everyone needs and wants to be respected for who they are. And when they feel like they're respected, it turns into a love that is healthy, because it develops our own self-respect. It boosts our confidence. In the love aspect of a relationship, it comes in and it says, I'm open. I'm willing to be vulnerable to you. I care deeply about you. You respect me and I respect you. How do we share that respect? It means that we share our admiration for someone, for their intelligence, their organizational skills, all the little things they do to make our life more meaningful, those things that are kind of a grudge to us is not to them. All of those things, taking the laundry, fixing the dinners that we like, or being able to go shopping with someone, all those things that say, you know, I really do love you for all that you bring to me. Respect is one of the greatest gifts we can give each other, because it's one of the greatest cultivators for creating a mutually satisfying relationship. When we don't respect our mate, what we're really doing is showing that we don't respect ourselves. Any relationship that there isn't an element, no matter what that element is or to what degree, if there isn't the element of respect, then that relationship is doomed for failure. Open-heartedness. Love takes the courage for us to open our heart to someone else. It means that we must be able to trust our partner, our mate, with our heart. Open-heartedness is the foundation upon which we create the intimacy that we need. If that intimacy is on an emotional level, we have to be open-hearted and we have to share to someone that we need to be able to express our emotions and be able to share who we really are. That open-heartedness is really what comes in and adds that richness to life and that beauty and really the depth. We have to be able to have separateness and togetherness. The nature of love isn't for both people to lose their identity. It encourages individuality and supports autonomy. Couples who feel secure in themselves and their relationship have the freedom to spend time with their friends or to cultivate their own interest, to be themselves and to really explore the potentials they have in themselves. Love isn't about smothering. It isn't about controlling, because all that does is it says to the other person, you don't trust me. You don't respect me. And I can't be open and open-heartedness to you to the point where I can share what I need. So anytime you have a smothering, a codependent, or a controlling relationship, what you do is you really create unhealthy codependency. While there's other aspects of the nature of love, the first thing I want you to remember, love is not brain surgery. This is what I learned as a yellow. It is not as complicated as I might like it to be. In fact, love really asks very little of us other than our willingness to let go of the expectations we have on it. So, a final look at love. Love asks us to live each day as if it was the first day and the last day of our life. It asks us that we offer love without expectations and conditions, and we do so with an open heart. Love asks that we value our mate and all they bring to the relationship, and we let them know through sharing the thank yous, the appreciation that we have for what they are looking for and what they bring to us. We have to feel important and recognized. And most important, every day you evaluate your patterns of behavior and the expectations that you have around love that's preventing you from truly experiencing love. Those expectations, those patterns of behavior need to be changed. Love is change. I have a quote that I'm going to be posting today on my Facebook and Twitter. It's wisdom for the day. I'm on wisdom today. Is love is a roller coaster of life. It has highs, it has lows. There's times when you're in the falling down to the deepest part of the roller coaster, it can scare the daylights out of you. And then there's that other side that is one of the sweetest parts of love. So let me jump in and take another call. And what I'd like to do is let's go to Miriam in Indiana. Hi, how are you?
Good, but yourself?
Very, very good. How can I help you?
Yes, my son, for the last 4 years, he's a junior in high school. He has this excessive sweating, and we've been trying to figure out, we had some blood work done, he's had some physicals and stuff, and we're just trying to figure out why is this occurring. The blood test came back normal. I'm just wondering what you could see.
Okay, let me start out by saying there are three ways that our bodies remove toxins: through our breath, through our urine, and through the pores of our skin. Anytime there's excessive sweating, I found as a medical intuitive, the body isn't being able to cleanse itself the way it needs, primarily through the kidneys. When I go in and I touch your son, as much as I'm able to with you, sweetie, being a surrogate and everything, one of the things with your son is the smell of his urine smells very, very strong at times to me. So what is happening is the body is using the sebaceous glands, the sweat part of the body, to be able to bring out the impurities that are inside his body that isn't able to really get out through the urine itself. Did they do a urinalysis test on him?
No, they did not.
I would encourage you to go and to test that out. And one of the things is he feels like an indigo to me. And one of the things that indigos have a difficult time is getting rid of the toxins and being able to deal with proteins the way they need to. Some of the things with your son feels like it has to do with kidneys. Again, it's not anything to be alarmed about. I wouldn't tell you to be alarmed, but I would give you the information for you to go and search more about something that's not going on. I'm not finding a polycystic disease within him. It's just that his kidneys they don't feel like they cleanse or he eliminates the waste in his urine the way he needs to. I can pick up a little bit of protein still in his urine. And a lot of times if we have the protein in the urine, then what it does is the protein can't be removed and it can come through in the form of being removed through the sweat. The other thing is the adrenals on top of the kidneys itself. He feels like he's a very, very focused young man. In fact, when I touch him, when he gets his mind set on something, honey, you shouldn't stand in the way and I'm not going to. And in that particular case, he's always feels like he's running this, like this little ever ready bunny, these different levels of adrenaline that basically are coming in and, keeping those adrenals into that fight or flight. So it may very well be that even in that, with the not removing it so much through the breath or through the urine, that it's just coming through the body itself. When I go in and I look at the sebaceous gland system, it is part of really what I would call the lymph system, even though anatomically it may not be called that. But the sebaceous glands are the way for us to get those impurities out of the body. There is a side of his body. There's one armpit that's more than the other armpit that seems to sweat more. It has more of a smell to it than the other side. Those are things for him to pay attention to. And one of the things that I encourage is that he probably should be hydrating himself more. For some reason, he feels like he has a need for electrolytes. His electrolytes get off. And so it may be that once in a while, Gatorade or something like that might be helpful, or Pedialyte, even though we think of it as being for children. It may be that there's something there. But what I would encourage you to do is to just go in and get a urine test, and he will have to do, of course, the fasting and everything, and then come in and see, do we have protein in it? Do we have, what do we have in it that would be causing this odor every so often to come up? The odor isn't tied to diet. It's something that is imbalanced inside of his body that his body's trying to remove.
Okay.
The other thing is, I think I'm going to touch him and see if I can do this. It would be really worthwhile if he were to do foot baths.
Foot baths, okay.
If he were to do, there's foot baths if he wanted to go to a spa. I'm not sure he wants to do that. He's kind of a manly man. He's got a lot of gentle Buddha in him, but he's kind of a manly man guy at the same time. But even if he were to get a foot soaker and put a little bit of Epsom salt in there, for some reason it feels like it would pull it out, the waste through the pores of the skin in his feet. And it would redirect the movement of the toxins and stuff out through the bottom of the feet. And for some reason that just felt like that would work for him.
Okay. How often?
It just, once a week or something like that. What he may find, is that he may find that there'll be a scum or a little bit of a residual in the process. If he were doing these foot baths that now use a form of, it's not really electrolysis, but it uses a form of polarity, more of a magnetism and everything. Sometimes in his case, if he were to do that, the water would turn really brown. It may look really mucky. And what that's doing is it's removing the impurities that his body is not able to through his pores and through the sebaceous glands.
Okay.
How old is he?
He's 17.
Okay, I couldn't tell. He's very, very wise. He's really very mature. The reason I had asked that is that, when I go in, he's having some other issues with oil with his skin. And that may very well be kind of plugging those pores up in the areas where we have concentrations of sebaceous glands. And it could be plugging it up, and then the sweating is trying, the body is trying to just literally get it out. It's kind of like having a fever when we sweat. It's trying to get that bacteria out of the body, and it uses the pores of the skin to do that. But he does feel like he has is developing an oiliness in his skin as well. So there's a variety of ways for you to look at that.
Okay, and then trying to work on getting the oil off his skin?
Yeah, just trying to get the oil off his skin, being sure that, you know, he washes it on a regular basis. And when he starts to sweat, when he gets into the sweating part, one of the best things that he can do is to take a shower and literally just remove all of those impurities that come through in sweating. That's the way we're designed. Remove those, and he can keep the pores of the skin open, and that will be able to help as well. The other thing is you might ask him to even go on and, you know, see about finding an anatomical picture of what he looks like, and look at the lymph system, and look in conjunction of the lymph system with the sebaceous glands, and that will give him the information to understand why he sweats more in some areas and not others, or why he sweats in general. That could be another way for him to do it.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. This is
my
pleasure.
My pleasure. Well, thank you so much for calling me. Okay, so we've looked at the nature of love from a variety of perspectives. We've looked at it through respect. We've looked at it from unconditional. We've looked at it from acceptance. But the most important thing is, know what love means to you. Know what you are looking for from love, whether it's external, internal. Know what your intimacy needs are. Do you literally need to be like a Spock with someone, where you have a mind meld with them, where your intimacy and connection is, where you're so connected mentally that you feel like you'll be able to go in and really read their thoughts? In reality, we never can. We look at habits. Or do you need that deep emotional connection? Or is your personality one that any time that the nature of love and you fall in love is, you take two people, you merge them in the sacred union called love, and voila, you get a new person. And then for the red personality, love is conditional. And when I say that, it goes and flies in the face of what I said, that it's not conditional. But remember that for the red, red is going to take care of you. They're going to give you your needs. They're going to be able to fill you up. You're not going to have to worry about your basic human survival part. And all they ask in return is that you meet their needs. Their needs are very simple. They run by the clock. They like to eat on time. If they're not going to eat on time, tell them they're not going to eat on time. They're very physical creatures. They need to have a lot of touching. They need to have a lot of intimacy around sexual exchange with them, making love with them. And it's going in and giving them that physical need. If your need is different than their needs, it's got to start. The nature of love says it's got to start with you. If love doesn't start with you, it is virtually impossible for us to find the love we're looking for when we look outside of ourselves, because in fact, what we're doing is we can't tell people what we need. We can't get what we need if we can't tell them. It is okay to say to someone, love to me means being able to share what I feel emotionally, what's going on in my life emotionally, and I want you to listen. I want you to be present in the moment. And those are the things that we need for love. So it's respect, first and foremost, always self-love. You must respect yourself. If you don't, then others will not respect you. Why? The law of attraction. We pull to ourselves the very thing that we need the most, so we can learn from those who don't give us respect what we need to do to find it. And where do we find it? We find it inside. So again, all of those are the things of the nature of love. We need to go in it. Open-heartedness. But again, for a yellow, I'm going to tell you, open-heartedness means I'm going to be committed. I'm going to be there. I'm going to give you what you need. I'm going to share with you. But please do not use my vulnerabilities against you. If you don't, then I will open my heart more. Again, my book, Love, What's Personality Got to Do With It? Hay House. com, also Amazon.com. It is a wonderful Valentine's Day present, but you know, it works all the time. If the love you're getting isn't the love you need, it's a wonderful way for you to be able to share what your needs are in a very non-threatening fashion and for you to realize, oh my gosh, they truly are different than me. So I really would like to close with this one final thought. You never really can change anyone. The best you can do is create the opportunity for them to want to change. How? You offer them love. So thank you so much for listening to the show today. It's been a wonderful, wonderful place for me to learn through the things that I share with you. I hope you will join me next week. If for any reason you want to listen to this love show, and you want to share it with someone else, then I encourage you to go to my website, www.richberger.com. Go to my homepage, go to radio. There'll be a drop down that says radio archives. This will be posted tomorrow, and then you'll be able to share love. And then also, if you have any questions about love, you might want to check out my book. Thank you so much. I'm going to see you on the radio next Wednesday at 10 o'clock in the morning. Remember, it is all about love. Thank you so much. Light and love. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Carol Rideberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com. See you soon.